Welcome to the Hoopsite Podcast. My name is Alex Kennedy. This is episode number 218. We post new episodes twice a week, so be sure to check back and subscribe. Joining me today is retired NBA veteran Trevor Booker, who's working to become a certified NBA agent, which we'll discuss in a bit. We'll also get into the concerns that some players have about restarting the NBA season and what the league can do. Trevor, thanks for joining me. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Alex?
I'm doing well. I think this is so interesting. You know, the NBA is supposed to come back on July 30th. It was supposed to be July 31st. Now they moved it to July 30th. But right now there are a lot of questions about this plan and what's going to happen. Last night there were a lot of players, I think 80 to 100 players that were on a conference call talking about some of their issues with the plan. We're going to get into some of the concerns that players have and kind of what's come out from this conference call. But when you first heard about the NBA's idea to create a bubble at Walt Disney World in Orlando, where players would stay for up to 3 months, what was your initial thoughts? What did you think of the plan?
My initial thought is it's going to take a lot of money, a lot of discipline, and it's going to be very interesting. NBA players are used to having freedom and doing whatever they want to do, basically. Going out when they want to, going to eat when they want to, just different things whenever they want to. So to put, teams in a bubble and not have them, have the freedom that they used to for so long, I knew it was going to be, pretty tough. It's not like we're talking, a week or two. We're talking months. That's pretty tough, the players love being around their families. Love being around the fans. So I knew it was going to be pretty difficult, but, being, such a basketball lover myself, I'm all for it, That's what I want to see, some basketball.
For sure, yeah. And I figured you and I could kind of provide the two different perspectives because you obviously played in the league, so you understand what that's like. And I know a lot of fans and journalists too. We're hoping for basketball as soon as possible. We're missing sports, obviously. We've seen the ratings for The Last Dance and things like that. It just shows you how much people are missing sports right now. So I think a lot of fans see this and they're thinking, we better still get basketball. Why are these guys doing this? But basically, let's talk about, what the players are thinking. Last night on the call, guys were apparently saying, you can't expect us to just go back and forth from the hotel to the gate, to the gym, and that's it. There are some players who are uncomfortable with the current plan to stay in this bubble for months. There's also been talk that there's a limit on the number of family members that players can bring. And NBA GM actually told me that the family members wouldn't be able to come until the second round of the playoffs. So, due to lack of space, basically once teams have been eliminated, then in the second round, then family can come. So regardless, guys are going a long time away from their family, away from their friends. You couple all of that with the fact that, there's this fear of the health risks, and guys don't want to get COVID-19, obviously, and they're putting themselves at risk. So I think fans sometimes forget that players are people too, and this is a lot for your employer to ask of you. Basically, hey, we're going to take you for 3 months away from everything, and you're going to dedicate your whole life to basketball. It's a lot to ask of players, right?
It's definitely a lot to ask of players. But it is, a business. It is, the player's job. It's just a bit of a deviation from it, like I said, players are used to, being able to do, things that they love outside of basketball, and to not be able to do that, for 3 months and, being on a strict schedule, it's going to be different. It's going to take some getting used to, some players, after practice, they may go eat lunch with, a buddy or something like that, or, go paint or do something to get their mind off of basketball. Now it's going to be a little bit different, a little bit, more difficult since they're in that bubble to do things like that. So that just makes it a little bit more difficult. But I mean, if we want basketball, that's really the only solution that I see right now.
Right. And I see where the NBA is coming from, because the NBA is thinking, look, we want basketball. I know a lot of players want to play and they want to get their paychecks too. There would be a lot of money that would be lost if guys didn't play. You know, players would miss out on $1.2 billion in salary, according to ESPN. Teams would miss out on tons of revenue. So there's a lot of money that, you know, would be lost if the season doesn't happen. So there's a lot of reasons why people want to play. And there's a lot of players that, you know, are on contending teams that think, hey, this is a chance for me to win a championship, and they want to play too. And the NBA thinks, okay, well, the only way we can make this work is if we have this bubble. And we heard that was one of the big reasons why they chose Disney, because it's on private property, there's a lot of security, they're able to transport players from the hotel to the gym very easily and keep this bubble intact. You know, they didn't want fans to be around. They didn't want players to be able to come and go easily. So that I get why they're thinking that. They're thinking, in order to protect players' health, we have to create this bubble. But I also understand players feeling, okay, well, then I'm going to be suffocated. I can't do anything that I want. I'm basically just playing basketball, then sitting in my hotel room all day. So I get the frustration there. And there's also other concerns too. You know, most teams will arrive in Orlando healthier than usual at this point in the season, thanks to the 4-month break. But a lot of strength and conditioning coaches and players have expressed concern that there could be more serious injuries than usual when the season resumes. And that's because players have been working out on their own since mid-March. And it's hard to mimic those game movements and game intensity when you're working out alone. So even though they're talking about having a training camp and 2 to 3 exhibition games, there's still that increased injury risk too. So guys may be thinking, okay, not only am I away from my family for 3 months and not able to do things that I want to do, I'm also at risk for getting COVID-19, and I'm putting myself at risk for a serious injury, which can mess with my money. You know, that's another thing to take into consideration as well, right? The injury risk.
Right. Definitely. So, you know, anytime you come from a long layoff and haven't played, you know, in, you know, real competition or games, there's a risk, you know, for you to injure yourself, you know, a significant injury. But I think that's why the NBA is giving the players, you know, the option of to play or not. You know, they understand, you know, the concerns of the players, and I think they take, you know, that very serious. You know, and I think didn't they give the players an option, you know, if they want to sit out, they can.
Yeah, they basically said if you want to sit out, there's no consequences. You won't get paid, and your team can go and sign replacement player to take your spot. I think that's what it's going to come down to. I think we're going to see a lot of that happening. I don't think there's a scenario where the entire season gets canceled. I think they're going to say, we'll leave it up to every player. If you want to participate, you participate. If you don't, you don't.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if a lot of players start to do that, it's going to be very interesting, you know. And then with the championship, whoever wins the championship, it's not going to be only an asterisk by because of COVID-19. Then it's going to be, you're going to have to look at, you know, the players who played that year, who set out. It's just going to be a lot. But I think it's something that the players are going to have to get used to, honestly, being in that bubble, because I don't see this COVID-19 situation going, you know, anywhere anytime soon, you know, even, you know, next season. I think the teams, the NBA is going to have to find, you know, different ways that they're not used to, or they're not accustomed to, you know, finding ways to play games and keeping the players safe. So I think this is just step one. And that they're trying to, you know, get this season done. And, you know, next season, I'm hearing that they could start in December. You know, that's not, you know, too far away. So they're going to definitely have to, you know, find ways to work around this COVID-19 situation.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. I had Howard Beck on the podcast earlier in the week, and we were talking about that, how the NBA's goal is to have every team back in their market and get back, you know, next season back to normal. But I don't know how that's possible. It's not like there's going to be a vaccine by December. And so even if they push the start of the season back, I feel like we're going to be in the exact same situation. Not to be pessimistic, but I feel like things aren't going to be very different come December. You know, we're going to have most of the league in one area, a single site, and try to create another bubble, or maybe have a altered version of that where maybe every division is in one location and there's a bubble, you know, multiple bubbles where, you know, everyone's kind of staying away, staying inside and just playing and everything. But we're going to run into these same concerns come December, where players are being stuck in a bubble. There's always going to be the risk of you know, testing positive and getting sick, and that's really scary for a lot of players, especially if they have underlying health conditions. I think this is not going away. I think this right now the focus is on finishing the season, but I would not be surprised if this, you know, led into next season too. I think right now the one of the issues that is coming up right now, and I think another concern that players have, is that they feel returning to play in late July will distract from the Black Lives Matter movement that's gaining so much momentum right now. So let's talk about that for a second, because apparently that was a big topic of conversation on the call last night. You know, we know about the injury risk, the COVID-19 risk, being away from their family, but the thought here is that people will be able to just go back to focusing on sports and not paying attention to this cause if the NBA comes back. So some players feel like sitting out amplifies the cause and makes people focus on it, forces people to focus on what's happening. But I know other players like Garrett Temple, they have said that players should go out there and use this platform and the money that they'll be paid to affect change. And when the NBA returns, I agree, the ratings are going to be crazy. I mean, we've seen that with things like Tiger King or The Last Dance. No, there's nothing competing with them in terms of, you know, there's no competition for these eyeballs, and sports fans, they're missing sports so much. So, you know, even if you're not a huge basketball fan, you're going to be tuning in. So it seems like there's kind of two schools of thought. The group that feels like we shouldn't play and force people to focus on this and not give them the distraction, and the people that are saying, no, we're going to have a huge platform and millions of people. This is how we can affect change and use our money that we make to affect change. You know, where do you kind of fall on that? I see both sides of this argument, and but I'm not sure which is the better way to make a difference.
Yeah, I see both sides. I definitely see both sides, you know, especially, you know, if they go back to play, and then it's going to take away from, you know, the momentum that we do have. It's such a big situation right now, and it's such a big movement. We've never had this kind of movement, you know, for, you know, the Black community. So I definitely understand, you know, we've tried, you know, tried for change, you know, for years, you know, hundreds of years, and we've never had this type of movement. So I definitely understand, you know, some of the players' concerns about going back and playing, you know, during this movement. But at the same time, I think just like some players think, they could use, you know, the platform that they're on to continue to, you know, make a push and promote change. And, you know, the NBA is, you know, a league, you know, a players league. And, you know, Adam Silver, he realizes that. And Adam Silver is all about change and helping growth and things like that. So I think it could be a situation where, you know, there's some kind of compromise. You know, the players that feel like the basketball will be a distraction from the movement, you know, they could go to Adam Silver and voice their concern. And, you know, I'm sure Adam Silver would be, you know, open ears, and they could, you know, brainstorm together about, you know, different ways that they won't allow playing basketball to distract from the movement, whether it's, you know, donating a certain amount of money over a certain amount of years like the NFL did. I think, you know, one of the biggest things that would help, you know, this movement and to help the Black community, you know, continue to rise is putting resources in our communities. And that I think the NBA could do, you know, they go to different communities now and, you know, put money into the community, whether it's building up certain areas or, but it's different kind of resources that, you know, that our communities need, because we're so far behind in education. We're so far behind in so many areas that I think the NBA, you know, if they had, you know, multiple conversations with our players, you know, our players realize, you know, what is really needed, I think the NBA would take that step. And I don't think they would be afraid to take that step, you know, to really help this movement out.
I completely agree. And I've been so impressed with the NBA players that have been stepping up and emerging as leaders during this time. We've seen so many guys out protesting and using their social media platform to affect change and making big donations. And it's not even just with the Black Lives Matter movement. We also saw it when COVID-19 started. You know, there were tons of guys that were donating money and buying meals and providing masks and all these different things. I've always been so impressed by the way that, you know, most NBA players use their platform and, you know, donate their money and their time and their energy to these different causes that are so important. You know, what's it been like for you to see so many fellow NBA players stepping up and making a difference?
I mean, it's great to see, but it doesn't surprise me at all. You know, that's what, you know, that's what we do, and the NBA allows it. So we're going to take advantage of the platform that we're on, and voice our opinions. And that's the thing that I love about the NBA. They're going to back their players, and that's what you're seeing right now. A lot of players, you know, voicing their concerns, and people are listening. And that's what we need to make real change. You know, the change starts from the top, and you know, it's a real movement going on. It's a lot of progression, and you know, the players are at the forefront.
For sure. Yeah. And I think that's what's going to come out of this. You're going to have, you know, some players choose to sit out, but I think a lot of them are just saying, look, we have concerns. We want to be heard. And usually the NBA is pretty good about that of saying, okay, what are your concerns? What can we do to address this and figure something out? So, yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see kind of what is decided upon after the NBA and the NBPA kind of have these conversations. I think you're going to see something, you know, some way that the NBA will try to address this and help in terms of the movement. And then I think they'll also have to maybe change some of the ideas or the rules associated with the bubble because guys seem really kind of frustrated about that idea and what that looks like. So I think it'll be interesting to see kind of how this gets tweaked. I'm surprised that maybe, you know, maybe this did happen and I just don't know, but I'm surprised that the NBA didn't have these conversations with players before kind of going public or leaking some of these details that of this plan because I feel like some of this could have been addressed maybe before they really lock things in place and all of that. You know, I know that the NBPA
Right.
ratified this a week ago, and then it was only after that vote that a lot of these players kind of spoke up. But you think the NBA maybe would have looked into some of this and seen some of these concerns coming. You know, I talked to an Eastern Conference general manager 2 weeks ago, and he said, yeah, I feel like players are going to sit out, and I'm concerned about it. I'm curious what the NBA is going to do. And then sure enough, we saw, like you said, they put those things in place where guys couldn't get punished and there'd be replacement players. I just don't know if they thought it would be at this level where you have 100 guys on a conference call all kind of showing their concern and speaking up. I think maybe it's a bigger issue than the NBA and people around the NBA expected.
Yeah, definitely. So, I think the COVID-19 situation, I don't think that would be a deterrent, you know, in the season presuming. If anything, I think it would be the Black Lives Matter movement, you know, because that's just so much bigger than anything else. That's way bigger than, you know, playing an NBA season. Because I mean, we've been oppressed for so long, and you know, to see real change coming about, you know, it's I don't even know the word to use. It's just so amazing, you know, to see the progress, you know, that we've, you know, taken the last, you know, month or so. And we want to keep that progression going because we understand, you know, it's so much change that needs to come. And you know, we know it's not going to happen overnight, but we just want to keep that progression going and work towards, you know, equality, because that's something that we've always fought for, that we fought for a long time. And you know, a lot of people just don't understand. A lot of non-Black people don't understand, you know, the things that we've been through. And you know, for us to make that progression, you know, so much progression within the last month, it's great to see.
Yeah, I mean, this is the first time in our lifetime where people can't just go dig, you know, bury their head in the sand and say, well, I'm just going to focus on, you know, sports or movies or concerts or whatever it is, you know, throw it out there. I feel like, you know, we always heard, oh, stick to sports whenever players want to talk about stuff like this, or whenever even sports writers came out and shared their opinions. It was, oh, stick to sports. And you heard that not only just in sports, but in a lot of different walks of life. People were tired of hearing from celebrities and things like that. And, you know, now for the first time ever, everything else is frozen. We don't have sports. We don't have concerts. We don't have movies. You know, everything is just frozen. So people basically can't say stick to sports because there's no sports to stick to. And everyone is having to focus on this. And I think it's creating a lot of conversations that maybe wouldn't have happened otherwise. And people that I've always thought are really closed-minded and wouldn't be able to understand the other side because maybe they don't have that kind of empathy, or their life experiences haven't really taught them a whole lot about racism and how the system is so oppressive and things like that. I feel like even they're starting to open their eyes a little bit because they're seeing these videos and hearing from different people. And I think it's been great. I totally agree with you. It's been...
Yeah, that's what we need. That's what we need. We need those conversations. As tough as they are, we need those conversations, you know, with different races, you know, just to have that conversation, see where we're coming from. I think the biggest thing that, you know, that the other races will have to do is, you know, just understand where we've come from and, you know, just educate themselves on, you know, the history of slavery and how everything was set up after slavery to oppress you know, the black culture, black people. And I think they will understand then, you know, why we act the way we act towards certain things, why we are, you know, in the projects, just why, you know, why we are who we are.
For sure. Yeah, I totally agree with you. And I get the fear too, that if all of a sudden the NBA comes back, I think one player told Adrian Wojnarowski, the focus will just be about, oh, you know, what happened in the game last night? What, you know, talking about the playoffs and talking about different players and different stat lines. And right now, that does seem very inconsequential with everything that's going on. You know, I totally understand that feeling among players. So we'll see if, we'll see what happens with this. I'm curious to see how many players speak out and what the NBA decides to do. But if I had to guess what happens, I think ultimately we'll see certain players decide to sit out, and then the season will continue on, and then those teams would have the option of signing replacement players for guys that either feel like they shouldn't be playing right now, or guys that are just concerned about coronavirus, concerned about the injury risk, don't want to be in the bubble. So it'll be interesting to see how many players step up and are in that group. Because one thing that's interesting too, if the players refuse to play and the season is canceled, players will lose $1.2 billion in salaries. That's 35% of their total pay. The NBA will lose $2 billion in revenue. And one thing that I don't know is being talked about enough, the NBA owners would likely tear up the CBA and try to make a new agreement that's less player-friendly. And, you know, right now we see there's basically a 50-50 split with the revenue with the players and the owners. If the players sit out, I could see the owner saying, okay, we're going to force a lockout on you, and we're going to try to make this a really owner-friendly new CBA. And fair or not, I think fans would be furious too and blame the players. And because I think right now you see so many sports fans are basically saying, we don't care, you know, we just want to see basketball, we miss basketball. So I mean, so much of a lockout too is about narratives and trying to win over, you know, the public opinion. I think not only would the owners have leverage,
I don't think the players would care about, you know, if how the public perceives them, you know, depending on what situation they use to not play the season. I don't think they would give a shit, honestly. I mean, I wouldn't, you know, if I'm trying to fight for something, I wouldn't give a shit what, you know, other people who, you know, who don't understand the situation would think.
That's a great point. Yeah, true.
Yeah. Yeah. But if it was a case, you know, where the owners did rip up the CBA and, you know, tried to play hardball, I think the players would be right there ready to play hardball, and they wouldn't let up. You know, the players have a fund where, you know, if it is a lockout, you know, they have compensation. So I think the players would be right there ready to play hardball and, you know, be ready to get what they want.
Yeah, and actually, the more I think about it, I do think certain fans would be understanding, and I think certain fans would say, props to you players for taking a stand and putting, you know, these issues above basketball and above your own livelihood, if you're allowing them to rip up the CBA and destroy a really player-friendly CBA, then, I mean, I think that is pretty noble. And I think a lot of fans would be frustrated because all they care about is sports. And again, some fans have trouble viewing guys as, you know, human beings. But I do think certain people would think that's pretty admirable to put your own livelihood on the line like that. So yeah, I mean, it would just be interesting to see what would happen financially. But then, like you said too, who knows what happens next season? You know, then we're talking about not only having a lockout and needing to negotiate a new CBA with all these different things, but also trying to start next season when there's just as many issues, not only socially, but also with coronavirus, with the bubble, all of that stuff. So that's kind of the worst case scenario. And hopefully it doesn't come to that. Hopefully the NBA can step up and, you know, do something so the players are feel like, you know, satisfied and everyone can kind of work this out. But that would kind of be the worst case scenario, right?
Right. Yeah, I think it's definitely going to be interesting. But I think that's the worst case scenario. I don't see it getting to that point. I think we're going to have a season. I think they're going to, you know, finish the season this season. And I don't think it'll get to that point.
I have to ask you this. If we do play this season, I'm so curious what this will look like. We've never seen anything like this before where 22 teams are all in one location. It's a neutral court. There's no home court advantage for the playoffs, which is going to be really weird. You don't even have fans in the stands. It's, you know, every game will be without fans. They're talking about having, you know, fake crowd noise in the building and on TV. So every game would be on TV because all of the courts at Disney have broadcast capabilities, but it would be such
I was hoping, and for that, I was hoping that they would find a way to incorporate real fans, you know, their voices during the game, you know, to make it realistic. And because, you know, the players are going to realize that those are fake, you know, like if they're playing a game and somebody scored a basket, they're going to hear fake cheers. So I was hoping that they found, you know, some kind of innovative way to, you know, let the fans really use their voice and, you know, and hear them cheer during the game, whether it's, you know, build an app for the fans to watch the game on and, you know, turn their microphone on where, you know, you can hear it over the loudspeaker and just hear everybody at once. Just some kind of innovative way to, you know, have fans, you know, cheer on their teams.
Yeah, that Howard Beck brought that up too and said, you know, there's a way, even if I agree with you, that would be really cool if they were able to somehow allow fans who are watching on TV to react and have it pumped into the building or something like that, or even just have someone at the games who has buttons that can kind of control it. So if it's the Lakers and LeBron makes a big shot, then the fans go crazy. And then when the opposing team's at the free throw line, you have tons of boos and things like that. You know, you could easily do something like that where it alternates, and depending on who the home team is, you have a different crowd reaction. But yeah, I mean, at this point, the NBA is going to try to get creative. But as a player, what would it be like to be in an environment like that where players are so big on their routines, and whether it's a home game or an away game, they have certain routines they want to do. Playing at a site where you've never played before on this court, there's no fans, what would that be like?
Tough. Super tough, because, you know, the players feed off the fans. So it's going to be tough, you know, just looking in the stands and not seeing, you know, fans, you know, in there cheering you on, you know, talking to you, even talking junk to you. You know, you get used to stuff like that, and it fuels players. So to be in a stadium, in an arena with no fans and, you know, going out there trying to, you know, some people are, you know, extroverts. So, you know, they need the extra motivation from the fans to get them going. And, you know, their game is based around, you know, the fans putting that pressure on them. So it's going to be, you know, very interesting, you know, to see how, you know, some players react and how some players play. It's going to be super interesting.
It kind of reminds me of whenever there was like the lockout league at Impact Basketball, where I know there were some fans at those games, but, or like even when you just have pickup games that are happening in the offseason, obviously there's bigger stakes and this will actually be the stakes associated to an NBA playoff game. But when there's no fans in the building, you know, fans may not know this, but at Impact and places like that, there actually are refs at those games. So it's kind of similar to pickup in the offseason or the lockout league that we saw in the past. But even that doesn't compare because the stakes aren't as high in that as it is in a playoff game, right?
Exactly. It's a lot more laid back during that time.
And I mean, the coaching staff too, we've heard different things recently about, you know, coaches, if they're a lot older, they could be at risk for, you know, COVID-19 and all of that. I know today there
That's
was,
very true.
Yeah, today there was a report that coaches will have to submit their medical history and they're going to try to, you know, figure out who's more at risk, who's not. And I know some coaches have pushed back and said, look, I shouldn't have to be away from my team. And I know you're trying to help me health-wise, but that's not really fair to me. So I'm just, there's so many things that still have to be figured out with this plan in order to make it work. But I mean, you kind of brought this up earlier. Some people are going to feel like if a team wins a championship, it's not going to be legitimate, especially if we see certain star players either sit out or get sick. If someone tests positive, if LeBron James tests positive and the Clippers win the championship, everyone's going to talk about how that's the only reason why they won. I mean,
right?
I think that's a great point. And what can the NBA, I guess, do to make sure that this championship feels legitimate? Because I really don't know. I feel like you're going to have those kind of questions. And I guess you can make the argument that, you know, if a team wins a championship this year, they overcame a ton of obstacles in a crazy time. So they do deserve credit because things were so crazy in the world. But there's going to be those questions, especially if guys are sitting out or star players end up having to leave because they test positive, right?
Yeah, I think the only thing the NBA can really do is, you know, address the concerns of the players that are thinking about sitting out and try to, you know, persuade them to play. That's the only thing that I can think of. You know, I think, you know, unfortunately, whoever wins the championship, you know, it's going to be people out there saying, you know, that, you know, it doesn't count and yada, yada, yada. I mean, but they're going out there and competing and they're still putting their lives on the line. So, you know, I guess it really depends on who you are and how you look at it. I mean, the way you look at it. But a championship is a championship to me. Of course, it's going to look different if, you know, if you're not playing against, you know, a star player in the championship. But, you know, that's just the reality of things, you know, the situation right now.
And one thing I'll say, too, that I've kind of realized the longer that I've watched the NBA and covered the NBA, in the year or two after that championship that everyone says, oh, it's not a real championship, there's that criticism and people don't consider it real. But then years later, whenever you're looking back on the guy's career, it's not like anyone says, oh, he has two championships and then that fake one. No, people say he has three championships and people look back on the list of championship winners and say, you know, these are the teams that won it all. They don't really tend to focus on, you know, the asterisk that people put next to these things. I think that's more of a fan thing. It'll be interesting to see kind of how this all plays out. But before we wrap up, I want to ask you this. I know you've been focusing on becoming an agent. For people that may have missed it, you announced your retirement recently, and now you are shifting to become an agent. What's that process been like for you?
It's been a pretty cool process, just making connections. You know, I'm a relationship guy. So I thought it would be perfect to go in the agent game. You know, I played the game for 8 years, so I understand, you know, a lot of the CBA. I'm studying, you know, the detailed part now of the CBA, just so, you know, I want to know everything before, you know, I stick my neck out there for a client. So I'm learning, you know, the details of the CBA, you know, making connections. You know, I have a couple of offers on the table to go work with, you know, different agencies. So I'm weighing that option versus, you know, just starting my own agency. But it's a fun process. You know, I've made some real cool connections. And I'm just enjoying retirement. So, you know, everything is good over here.
That's awesome, man. That's great to hear. I'm so happy for you. I know for a while you were weighing different options. You were thinking I could become an agent. I could maybe focus on broadcasting. I think you have also made a great coach. I don't know if you had an interest in that path, but at what point did you decide that becoming an agent was what you wanted to do?
Well, this whole summer, I say probably a couple of months before I decided I was going to retire, you know, I was just thinking about different things that I can get into when I retire. You know, I could, you know, just go the business route and, and, you know, work with the companies that I own right now. Or, you know, but basketball has been such a huge part of my life, you know. So I wasn't ready to give up the game. You know, I still wanted to get out there on the court. So, you know, I was like, you know, let's stay into the sports world. Let's stay into basketball. You know, I'm very, you know, educated in the basketball realm. So let's stay around there. I thought about, you know, coaching, but I was like, nah, it's too strenuous. I mean, I do love the game, and I think, you know, my basketball IQ is pretty high, but, you know, I think it would take away a lot of time from my family, and my kids are getting older and playing a lot of sports now. I want to be there for that. So, you know, I thought, why a sports agent? I know the CBA. I'm great with relationships. I'm a trustworthy guy. And, you know, I watch basketball every single night that is on the NBA. So why not be a sports agent? And that's how I came up with that.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I mean, when you've played in a league and you have a notable name, that opens up doors too, because so much of being an agent is sitting down in front of, you know, prospects and their families or current NBA players and saying, look, trust me, I got this. I know what I'm doing. I can help you. And I think that's going to be such a thing, you know, that's going to be such an advantage for you, because guys will know that you have been in this league and you understand what position they're in. You can put yourself in their shoes. Whereas other agents, you know, they can try their best and, they obviously have their own pros and cons that come with them, but I feel like that's going to open so many doors too. The fact that, you know, people know you and you know this game and can put yourself in their shoes.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I'm definitely looking forward to it.
Well, I'm so proud of you, man. I think it's awesome to see. I'm glad that you are happy in retirement. Hopefully soon the world gets back to normal and you can enjoy your retirement by, you know, golfing and traveling and having a ton of fun. And then hopefully you have nothing but success in the agent world. I'm proud of you, man.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I appreciate it big time.
Thank you. Thank you so much for joining me, man. I appreciate your time.
All right. Thanks, Alex.
Everyone, make sure you follow Trevor on Twitter at 35_fits. And if you guys want to hear more episodes of the Hoopsite podcast, check us out on Spotify, Apple Podcast, anywhere podcasts are found. And until next time, thanks for listening.